here we go. WTC number 20 on the air. We talk comics for Faces of Evil. And I'm going to throw first to our first host, which is Brett. And Brett, tell us. Yes, it's Brett. That's Brett. It's the first host. Brett, tell us. Who is it you would like to have a superhero team up with?
Well, I think that if I was going to have a superhero team up, I'm going to choose a character that I don't necessarily like that much, Wolverine. And the reason that I say that is because with his healing factor, it means that I would have to do even less than most superheroes, and I might get a trip to Japan out of it.
Interesting choice. Keith, who would you like to have your superhero team up with?
Oh, I wonder who this is.
Yeah, I'd say great minds think alike, because I think Superman, for the same reasons that Brett just said. I can't imagine an easier time than teaming up with Superman.
Oh, here I thought it was going to be Booster Gold. You let me down.
Yeah, really, Booster actually.
Booster works alone.
Unless you're a Blue Beetle.
I'm no Blue Beetle.
All right, Chris, why don't you...
I thought long and hard, and I actually took a similar route, although my methodology is a little bit different. I'm picking the Creeper. Everybody else seems to have monthly adventures. The Creeper really is not that busy, and I can drink with him. You can just go to that would be our adventure. We could go to the bar and just chat.
All right.
Because he's the Creeper.
He's the Creeper.
Now, Brett, I'm just sort of curious. Would your secret identity when you're teaming up with Wolverine, would it be Jubilee by any chance?
I'm hoping not.
Brett looks fantastic in a yellow raincoat.
Yes, my hair doesn't really match, and I don't like wearing those sunglasses.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you that if I was doing a superhero team-up, it would be a Starfire, because after we save the world, I'm guaranteed to get me some. Yeah, high five. Anyone? Anyone?
Virtual high five.
All right, everybody. Time for the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, a mixed bag this week. We have the biggest news in comics this week. The Infinite from Skybound, an imprint of Image Comics, has been canceled at issue 4 due to artistic differences between Robert Kirkman and Rob Liefeld. The bits we're hearing
is that Rob
Liefeld...
One of them's an artist, the other one sucks.
They're good friends. They had gone into this wanting to work together. And what we're hearing is that either or both were unhappy with the work that the inker was doing on the book, couldn't come to any kind of middle ground. And we've seen a couple of pages, actually, of the inked work compared to Rob Liefeld's pencils. And I'm going to hazard an editorial comment that calling those pencils is a bit generous. Basically, Liefeld was doing what I would consider more layouts or breakdowns, and the inker was finishing, and Liefeld was unhappy with the way it was being finished.
So what you're saying was Liefeld's art not looking good.
It actually reminded me a bit of Greg Capullo when he was kind of aping Liefeld on X-Force, where he was kind of being made to look like Liefeld's. So, yeah, it's...
What I'm trying to say here is Liefeld sucks ass. Move on.
All right. Generation Hope, thought to be a key part of the Avengers vs. X-Men crossover, is not. It will be canceled at issue 17.
Are there any discernible differences between the Hope character and Rachel or the X-Man, Nathan that eventually came Cable? It seems like these characters all have exactly the same storyline. Came back from the future. I'm Scott Summers' daughter.
What about Bishop? Came from the future,
yeah,
too, didn't he?
Black.
Oh, he's black.
He wasn't Scott Summers. He wasn't Scott Summers' daughter.
Are you sure? Are you sure the black man from the future was not Scott Summers' daughter?
It is hard to tell. That's true. check the geek sites the past couple of days. You'll see a commercial for the DC Nation block of DC programming on Cartoon Network coming up this year. The little teaser is a new animation short, 1 minute long, from Aardman Animation, creators of Wallace and Gromit. And it's very cute. It's awesome. It's an Aardman Animation version of Superman, Batman, and Catwoman. It's incredibly cute. I don't know if that's going to amount to anything in the block of programming, or maybe they just have an idea to do more of these little shorts from various people. It's really awesome, though, and worth taking a look at. We've seen a few pages of Dan Jurgens' artwork for Superman number 7. I'm very, very interested in this book. Comic Book Resources has 4 or 5 sample pages of penciled and inked work. And they are talking about a potential crossover in the summer of Superman, Superboy, and Supergirl when they can organize the story arcs of all 3 books to coincide for them to do a one-month crossover.
You said when DC can organize.
Apparently the writers are just working together directly. That seems to be the easier way to do things at DC. You just call up. Most of these things, I think, are just done on Twitter now. And Marvel's relaunching their children's line in April with 2 books, both of them tying into the Marvel TV block that we were talking about last week on Disney. The books will be Ultimate Spider-Man Adventures, which will include work by Dan Slott and Ty Templeton, and Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes by Chris Yost and Adam DeRaker.
And it's not Visionaries, I'm not interested.
Well, you support these 2 books and start writing letters and see if they'll expand the line.
They're out of titles.
Bring back a long dead toy line.
They're out of new titles for comic book series, aren't they? Officially.
These are the titles of the cartoons. So it's
all right, they're out of new titles for cartoons, too. Let's just take what's already been out there a billion times, slightly rework it.
Well, the names of the cartoons come from ways that they're talked about in the comics, and then the comics for kids come from the cartoons so that they tie in. So, basically, Mo, you're wrong. But
oh, I think I'm right. I think they've run out of names for titles. Give me something new.
What would you like?
Changing the subject, I think have they named this new line? Spider-Man.
I actually don't know. Yeah, I don't think they have, Chris. It is tying into the Marvel line of animation that's coming from the Disney Channel. So likely we'll have a name.
Well, I bet they call it Marvel Star. They haven't got any new names.
I'm actually thinking they're going to call it Disney DX Comics or something like that.
It could be, and we're expecting soon that the Disney characters will start turning up in Marvel Comics. The license runs out very soon with, I believe it was Boom that was publishing them.
All right, well, seems since none of us are likely to read any of these, we're spending a hell of a long time talking about them. Next news bit.
That was under the mistaken impression that Mo thought there weren't enough comics for kids. So, moving along. And John Ruzum, who was writing Static Shock, has been unhappy with some of the way that the work has been portrayed in the Twitterverse and chat rooms, etc., and has basically written a long blog post on his own site in more or less saying, don't blame me, it's their fault. It's quite unusual for a creator to come out like this, but basically he has blamed the editor and his co-writer and artist, Scott McDaniel, for everything that didn't work. Says he was locked out of the process, everything that he tried to contribute was just thrown away, and very unhappy with the process that he went through. And that's the news.
With Cub Reporter K. All right, this is 4 Faces of Evil, because we're going to talk about our favorite villains and lots of villain talk and blah, blah, blah with villains. Why? Because villains are good. You know why? Because villains make stories interesting, more so than heroes. So we're going to go right now. We're going to open up with favorite villain and least favorite villain, first from Brett.
Well, my favorite villain is probably going to be Kraven the Hunter. I've always enjoyed him, but again, I think it's really because of the Fearful Symmetry storyline that he just kind of popped up right to the top. I mentioned this book a lot. I'm like a broken record in that regard, but But Craven is a very interesting character. He's always got a little bit of dichotomy in whether and like why he's doing the things that he does. I like Dr. Doom a lot too, but I'm going to go with Kraven the Hunter. Do you want my least favorite as well?
Yeah,
right
go
now?
With your least favorite right now.
Well, my least favorite is undoubtedly Norman Osborn. Because he is, he would also, get my overused villain, because I just hate the fact that he came back. Actually, it's funny because I liked Norman Osborn before Green Goblin died, and I hate Norman Osborn after Green Goblin died. So basically, it's the Norman Osborn post Green Goblin death that I hate.
All right, that's good, Brett. You just took you said he's your least favorite and your most overused, and coincidentally, he was my least favorite and most overused. So that's good.
Excellent.
For once, we're agreeing on something. Keith, your turn.
All right. Well, my favorite, I'm going to go with Magneto, particularly what they've done with him from about issue 200 of Uncanny X-Men on, when they started adding a lot of ambiguity. And he's gone back and forth, whether he's evil, whether he's not evil, when he ran Genosha, when he had the satellite orbiting the Earth. Now he's back with the X-Men. He's... maybe he's being too much of an influence on Cyclops. Maybe he's trying to be on the side of good guys. It's hard to tell. He's a complex character. I really like him. My least favorite character, let's say the Rainbow Raider. A little obscure. May not have come across him. It's an issue of Booster Gold, though. Just a terrible character. All of his powers are to do with color. He's a painter. Who is a criminal for because someone stole his art style. It's just a really silly character. Very 80s, 70s, 80s character. He should have been, if he wasn't one of Flash's rogues gallery, he should have been, because he very much would have fit into that mold. An overused character, I'm going to say Ra's al Ghul. That character was so strong when he was used about once every 5 years, and then they started including him in regular storylines, having regular arcs that had the character, particularly as they got close to Batman Begins and more people were aware of the character. And I think they just watered them down by having him appear too much.
Chris, your turn.
Alrighty. My favorite villain, I thought long and hard. I mean, I love Doom. I love the Red Skull. And then I realized the storylines I enjoyed the most, with one particular villain he's not even really he acts so indirectly. I'm going with the Rose, a.k.a. the Schemer, a.k.a. Richard Fitz, Kingpin's son. I just love how he just sort of slides in right next to the so-called villain of the piece and influences the whole thing. And he doesn't have it in incredibly bad storyline. I don't think I've ever read a bad comic starring this character. He's not around much, but when he's there for when it counts. For overuse, which we seem to be doing as well here, the Rhino and the Shocker. You know, as soon as they show up, it's a throwaway storyline. It's just why? They just needed some thugs.
And your least favorite?
Oh, my least favorite? Killer Croc. I hate Killer Croc. And I'm actually going to modify that by saying Killer Croc when he's out of Arkham Asylum. Because, you know, as soon as he gets out, we now have a sewer adventure, which is almost impossible to follow. It's Killer Croc in the sewers. Batman has to go down there again. We got a weird ass fight. It doesn't make any sense. Let's just keep in a Arkham where he can, like, bite off people's hands and stuff. He doesn't work outside of the asylum. I hate it.
You know what? Honestly, I find this really, really hard to do any of these. And not because there's so many out there that I like, but, or dislike or anything like that. It's because, or even overused. is because if it's a consistently good storyline, he can be in 100 straight issues. A character can be in 100 straight issues. If it's crappy, he could be in one. And, you know, or he can be in five great ones and one crappy one and change you. So it's all about the quality of the writing anyways. And it's really hard to find characters who are either poorly written every single time or well written every single time. I do understand what Keith said about Magneto. I mean, I look at a good villain and I think I may not really agree with their point of view, but I understand it. I understand that they think what they're doing is right. I understand they think they're right, everybody else is wrong, even if they're twisted and warped. And Magneto probably sums that up better than anybody else, and probably was the first character, villain character, I kind of felt had that many layers and that kind of a real world character that I could see him actually existing instead of just being a cartoon villain. But ultimately I got to go with Thanos because that is probably my favorite villain. He's also a very, very complex character and, just very, very cool. And anybody who I think everybody looks at, not just a threat to the world, but a threat to the entire universe every single day, but he's still cool and still a complex character with lots of layers and honor and everything. I think that really what makes him work for me. So, and of course we talked about Brett already nailed my other ones, overuse and least favorite. And he said every reason why I feel it too. So no sense in going through and doing it one more time. But, that brings us to another one. This is an interesting one. Let's go underuse, Brett.
I'm going to jump over to the DC side of the fence for this one, and I'm going to go with a Batman villain named Hugo Strange. There's a villain that that when he appeared in the Prey story and in the, I think it was one of the Batman annuals, I thought this was a really interesting character, great psychological character for Batman to face off against, and I just know that he hasn't appeared all that much since then.
He's too easy to turn into a mad scientist and not have a good take on for a lot of people.
True, but well, if used properly.
That's why he is underused. Awesome. You're definitely right.
And Batman's oldest villain.
Pardon me, Chris?
Yeah, he predates the Joker by about 4 months.
I didn't know that.
Cool. Okay, let's go to Keith. Favorite underused character.
Well, mine's a character that's not necessarily never used, but I think he should be featured more than he is because he's just one of my favorite villains, and that's Two-Face. You know, we've got so many of these, you know, hardcover collections of these wonderful Joker stories, you know, beautiful artists get tied to them, and Two-Face ends up in these B stories. I mean, he's going to be literally a B story in Detective coming up. And I'm not looking forward to, I won't even pick it up because I hated the book so much when I read the first issue. And even Two-Face won't let me pick it up. But I think that's a character that would be really well served by a big feature. Now the public knows more about him because of the Dark Knight movie. So that's my pick.
All right, Keith or Chris. Actually, Chris is already gone. So Chris, your turn.
Yep, I'm going with Arcade. Now, I love him for the exact same reason I said I hated the Rhino and the Shocker, that his storylines can be taken out of any given series and it won't be noticed. But the issues he's in are just so much fun. You just get some random heroes and he'll throw them in a pinball machine for a couple of issues. I just have a great time reading that kind of comic. I mean, He doesn't even make sense, like his motivation. Sometimes he's a mercenary in a white suit. So sometimes he just wants to torture some heroes. And where does he get the money for all these toys? It's never explained.
But actually, it is. He's rich. I mean, he's like a rich kid, spoiled rich brat. I mean, that is out there.
It's not explained well.
Well, I think they don't Claremont characters.
They don't take the time to reintroduce the fact that he's self-rich.
Yeah, he's a spoiled brat, rich character, the kid.
And basically, why does he do this anyway? It's a ridiculous concept, I just love that we throw these, you throw some heroes into a pinball machine or an amusement park or some silly thing, and they have to fight their way through it.
You know what?
It doesn't actually. Dan Slott needs to use this character.
You know what?
That was very great.
Dan Slott actually did use the character in his the second series of The Thing, which lasted 8 issues in 2006, and the first 3-issue story arc is with Arcade.
And every time we do one of these shows, I end up with this longer and longer list of things I've got to dig out of.
You know what? He also you know what, Brett? He also created my favorite level in the Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Your characters had to fight against Arcade in the video game. That was awesome.
Murder World, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. All right.
And I think the same could...
What's that?
Sorry, I'm just thinking here. The same could be said for on the DC side. I believe her name is Roulette, Mr. Terrific's daughter or granddaughter. Also, just random violent silliness that's just great. And I could use. I'd like to see a whole lot more of that.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna give a special mention to a character that I only saw. I believe has only appeared once. Called Rapier, I believe. Spectacular Spider-Man Annual number 3 is only appearance, and just interesting character who had gone paralyzed, had worked his way back from, and was using basically a swordsman and type character who came back to avenge himself for the people who had paralyzed him. But because he goes too far, he's a villain. He could have very easily been a hero. I thought this was a great character. Nobody ever used him again. And the character I'm going to use is the same idea. It's a character who's only ever appeared in like 6 books, only in 1 series. His name is Hardcore. He was in Marvel Comics Cage series. He was Cage's main villain for about the first 18 issues or however long that series lasted, only about 20. So for the majority of it, basically he's a Moriarty type character. Yes, he knows martial arts. He knows his hands are being martial arts to the point where they can cut through steel, basically. But basically, he's not a character with powers. He's a Moriarty-type character in that just when you think you've got him, he's got one more trick, one more... Whatever you do to outthink him, just when you thought you've outthought him, he's one step ahead of you still, and you never get him. And so that's... I love that type of character. I think that's a great template for a character. I think this is a character... That it's a too bad just kind of got lost. I'm going to ask you guys, I'm going to throw this one out to you. This wasn't in our list of things to talk about. Let me just throw this out to you. Any of you have a favorite, and I'm just going to throw it out here in a potpourri. Anybody can just raise their hand if they do. Anybody have a favorite new villain? Somebody who's come around in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years or whatever, who you thought, oh, that's a great new character that's a villain that I really appreciate.
I like what they're doing with the new version of Jack-O-Lantern, who's been appearing in the past few issues of Venom. It's actually the good guy, Green Goblin from the 90s, who is now completely insane.
The Falco series.
They've made him a villain now, and he's the new Jack-O-Lantern. And they've been doing this...
Ben Urich?
Yes. Not Ben. Ben's nephew.
Oh, okay.
Peter Chuck Urich.
Yeah, Urich. I know it's not that. It's, I don't, but yeah.
It's Ben Urich's nephew or something.
Right, okay.
And the Odd Couple storyline that's been going on the past couple issues in Venom has been hilarious, the two of these characters together.
I quite liked Hush. I think maybe the second story arc with him wasn't as good as the first, but I thought Hush as a new character... introduced in the Batman universe was one I really, really liked and had a lot of potential too. And tying in his backstory with Batman and the way they did gave him a lot of depth and made him seem like a character that had been around a long time, even though he hadn't. So there was a new character for me. That's probably my favorite new character of the last few years. Anybody else have anything else who you thought, oh, that's a new character, but I really like him. Has potential to be the next big villain.
I got nothing.
No.
No?
I feel like I haven't read enough new comics to actually be able to block them.
That's not a feeling, Brett. That would be true.
I can go again.
All right. So since you have your favorite villain there, Brent, why don't you tell us your favorite story for that favorite villain?
This should be a tough one for anybody to guess. I'm going to have to go with Kraven's Last Hunt, because I love Kraven's Last Hunt. I won't ever burden anybody with that with me for jabbering about it again.
Keith, your turn, your favorite storyline.
My favorite villain storyline. Arkham Asylum. The Grant Morrison. It's a great graphic novel, really focused on the characters inside Arkham.
Yeah, but you're supposed to take your favorite for your favorite villain.
Oh, sorry. I got distracted there momentarily.
That was what you had written down. Pick a story for your favorite villain.
A great bit in that, man.
I'm going to just try that again. I was actually distracted because I think all my stuff about Jack Clarence wrong. So a storyline for my favorite villain. There were a lot of good ones as they were introducing the Tim Drake Robin, Lonely Place of Dying, and the first couple of arcs with the new Robin. Really built that character out in a different direction and made him a much more dangerous character than he had been in quite a long time. I like some of the newer stuff, but he's not getting a lot of A-level. He's often kind of in a group of villains, like the way he was in he's in his small part in Joker, and some of the stuff they were doing with the new, with the Rene Montoya question was interesting.
Yeah, Keith, recently Batman took a little holiday, recently being 3 or 4 years ago, I guess now, and Two-Face did his job. How did you feel that played into the character?
I just read those stories, actually, so it was a little jarring for me to see, Dent all cured up. It was the one-year-later storyline, is what you're thinking of. And
yes.
At the end of Infinite Crisis, they jumped ahead 1 year in continuity, and Batman had left Gotham City in Harvey Dent's hands. But after a year, Batman comes back, and Dent has started to crack under the pressure of being in charge of Gotham, and it leads to the next round of the unbalanced Harvey Dent.
Yeah, actually, I kind of like that. I was surprised when I saw that they were doing that with him, but I remember picking it up those 1 year later and seeing Dent doing that, and I thought that really worked.
I thought your favorite villain was Magneto.
Yeah, I thought so too, actually. I actually was wondering this as you were talking, Keith, but I thought maybe Keith, I made the mistake.
I think you actually do need notes for this.
Holy crap, he's not as smart as we always thought he was.
There was a Zero issue of Magneto years ago that I think it was a retailer incentive for the Fatal Attractions crossover.
Yes, it was.
And it was the first time we saw a real origin of Magneto. And more recently, some of that was expanded out in the Magneto Testament miniseries, which is just excellent. So those are tied for my favorite Magneto stories.
That's cool. That's cool. Chris, your favorite villain's your favorite story.
I'm going with this one because I know Bendis isn't a favorite on this podcast other than myself. I actually really like Michael Brian Bendis. I think Brian Michael Bendis. What did I say?
Michael Brian Bendis.
Okay. We can go either way.
I like Bendy Michael Bryan, personally.
But his storyline, Underboss, from 26 to, I believe, about 34 in the Daredevil, in Daredevil Volume 2, was absolutely spectacular. Really enjoyed it. Plus, it had the owl. I love the owl.
I love the Taskmaster. Forgot about him. But no, my favorite storyline for Thanos is easily Infinity Quest. This was his how he gained the Infinity Gauntlets in the first place. setting up the Infinity Gauntlet storyline, crossover for the Marvel Universe. This was a two-part graphic novel that is absolutely fantastic because he goes through and there you have the different people with the different Infinity Gems, and you know he has to be more powerful than one. He has to outwit the other. He has to. So it basically he acquires all these gems through different ways. And it's just so smart, so logical, so well written. The characterization is so incredible. The art is so beautiful. Easily my favorite Thanos story. One of my favorite storylines of all time. Let's talk about something
else. Actually, I just want to make one last point. I'm going to bring up because I did mention Doom as my as one of my secondary favorite. I would like to mention the Warren Ellis Doom 2099 run, which I thought was a great great storyline for a great villain.
Actually, let's do our Doom favorite our favorite Doom appearances, because I mean it's the favorite. Mine has to be Marvel super villain team up. Him and Submariner just facing off against each other for an entire run. Just great stuff.
I'll give you my favorite Doctor Doom, no problem, is Secret Wars 1. I mean, he was the genius. He was so crafting all this stuff behind the scenes, and he stole the Beyonder's power. He was that brilliant. I thought he was awesome in that series.
Oh, and especially good since he pays no attention to any of the other characters other than Galactus for the entire series.
Yeah, he's great in that. I love him. The original Secret Wars, Doctor Doom.
Well, my favorite Doctor Doom would be the various stories during John Byrne's Fantastic Four run. The bit where he made the Fantastic Four shrunk down inside a little town, and when Byrne started playing with the idea that Doom had never actually encountered people, it was always robots, which he played out further in his West Coast Avengers run. It was just some really fun stuff and really played the character as far as you could take him without turning it silly. It was really fun.
Cool. All right, let's move on to one other subject that we want to talk about when we're talking about villains. We haven't talked much about Joker, but, I mean, he's the frickin' Joker. And he rules, and there's been a few different versions on film of the Joker. So I want to ask everybody their favorites. Let's compare them. Fred, how do you compare the different versions of film of the Joker?
I really enjoyed Jack Nicholson's Joker when I first saw it. And then I think that the more I watch it, the less I wind up liking it. Whereas on the other side of the coin, but I really like Jack Nicholson as an actor. The other side of the coin is Heath Ledger's a guy that I never really appreciated as an actor, but I love his portrayal of the Joker. It really shocked me that he actually was able to get a good performance, but I thought that he did a fine job as the Joker. And Cesar Romero rocks.
So your favorite would be the Ledger and then the Romero and then?
And then probably the Nicholson, yes, that's what I would suggest.
You know what, I think as long as we're doing these, I just want to say I know it doesn't technically qualify as one of the three, but
Mark Hamill.
Yeah, you just beat me to it, Brett. Mark Hamill as the Joker and his great voice acting. I love it.
I actually thought of that because, of course, he was just in the Arkham Asylum and Arkham City games, and I mean he's fantastic.
Keith, what do you think? How do you compare the three different versions of and if you disagree with any on Brett, feel free to start the discussion.
I think I've had a bit of the same experience with the Nicholson version, and then with all the rest, that as I change and as I see the character, my opinion of the various interpretations has changed. I went through a long period where I loved the Batman film, the Tim Burton Batman, and I really hated what they had done in the 60s version because I thought that it was so camp that it undermined the characters, that it had damaged comic characters for too long by making them camp. But as I've grown older and a bit less cynical that way, I've taken to really liking particularly the Batman film, the theatrical film that was made. which was made actually just so that he could get a whole bunch of toys to use on the second season of the TV show, like the Bat Boat. Romero just had fun, and I think it's hilarious that he refused to shave his mustache and they had to put makeup over his mustache, which is so much more obvious when you watch the film than when you saw the TV show. So I think I'd end up putting him in the same order that that Brett had. Heath Ledger, I was a fan of Heath Ledger, and was very excited to see where he was going. Of course, tragic that they will only have the one. What might have been if he had been in a third or fourth Batman film. But yeah, I think at this point Ledger and Mark Hamill are, you know, they're the high water marks. They're what you have to beat now for the next version. Mark Hamill's retired from doing the character, and the next time we see it will be something completely new.
Chris?
Yeah, I wish I could disagree. I will probably rate the Cesar Romero a little higher, just because I think you look at the Joker and he looks like Cesar Romero now. But before he was a little more clowny. Really, the physical appearance of the Joker has evolved from that TV series, and the mustache—I just love—I just love that mustache. I just can't take my eyes off it. Yet it just adds this maniac to the character that is really quite funny. So yeah, I definitely go Caesar, Heath Ledger, and then Jack Nicholson, because let's face it, that's just Jack doing Jack. He's just being himself, slightly exaggerated in those movies.
Isn't that Jack Nicholson in every movie?
Yeah, well, slightly exaggerated, I'm saying, but yeah. I hate to disagree with the Mark Hamill thing. He's a wonderful voice actor. I just always found his Joker and his Trickster almost exactly the same.
Well, I think definitely he found some inspiration for the Joker from portrayal of the Trickster on the Flash TV series. I think there's something to be said for that. Which do you consider the Nicholson to be even more campy and over the top than the Romero?
I would actually say yes for myself. And it's because of the fact that the Romero version fits exactly into what the TV series tries to do. Whereas the Nicholson one is almost glaring in how he doesn't necessarily fit into the 1989 Batman movie.
You don't think he does?
I think my problem with that character is, with Nicholson's version, is the writing that was done. I didn't like what they added to the character, and it's something that I thought they did really, really well with the Heath Ledger version, is the Joker works better when he has no motivation. And they gave the Nicholson character motivation. They felt like they had to explain how he became how he was. They gave him an origin story. They made him the guy that killed Bruce Wayne's parents, which I'll never forgive that film for, because it's just horrible.
Absolutely.
And my apologies to Sam Hamm, who I blamed for years for that. It turned out he didn't write that piece. Sam Hamm's a big comic fan, and that was not his choice. So the co-writer the script doctor who thought that was the right decision to add to the script, I hate you. And I think that's, yeah, I like the character when there is no explanation. You know, I love the bit in Dark Knight where he gives four different versions of his origin. I loved it.
Did Jack know he wasn't on the 60s, the 60s show?
No.
Because you could have actually take that character and had it play in the camp version.
Yeah, he's a little bit too violent, but other than that, you certainly could have. I remember Romero, physically, when I think of the Joker, right, the Romero version is the one I think about. So I'll never forget do you remember the People's Choice Awards when Batman won for Best Film? And Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson both went up to accept the award. And Michael Keaton's sitting there in the middle of his speech, and he's sitting there going, when I decided to finally accept the role of the Batman, and Nicholson taps his shoulder and goes, wait a second, you were the Batman? It was like the greatest moment in award show history. Trust me, you had to have seen it to know it.
It must be on YouTube.
Pardon me?
Now I'll add that to my list of things to find now.
That has to be on YouTube. It was hilarious. Honestly, it was one of... I laughed. I don't know if I ever laughed so hard on an award show, because I usually think they blow donkey balls, as Chris would put it. But, there's a moment in the Dark Knight, and I do think the Dark Knight as a film, as a general rule, is very overrated. It's a good film, but I don't think it's, I don't have it at the level as what its reputation or success was. But there is a point in that film where Ledger does this, he's really scary, despite being the Joker. I mean, he really, really, you have a sense that this guy is completely mad and would kill all of us without any remorse or thought. As easily as we would step on an ant. And that there was a power in that performance that I thought was really, really impressive. And especially in this one scene I'm thinking of where I thought, this guy's really, really scary. He scared the hell out of kids. And I think that's something he said. The other characters, I don't think the Joker from Romero and certainly from Nicholson would ever scare a kid. Ledger would scare. If you took your 6-year-old to this show, I think he could scare the hell out of him. And that's something to be said, because Joker should be a little scary, don't you think?
Yeah, I like the character when he's, like I said, motivationalist. That, you know, you cannot rationalize with him. There is that line in Dark Knight that you can't rationalize, you can't negotiate with this person. It's he's just
that crap crazy.
He's just. Pun more than intended. Brett's been saving that one up all day.
But on the other hand, you have to say this with Nicholson. It did give us the line, "Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" God damn, that's a great line. Say what you will about the character and whether or not they screwed it up by making him kill the parents. They did. But God damn, that's a great line.
I think what I love most about the Joker character is there are so many versions and you never know which one is going to show up. Because my probably second favorite appearance of the Joker ever my first, of course, was The Killing Joke, which was awesome. Then the Joker disappeared from the comic books for a while. And then the second, when he reappeared, is my second favorite. It was in a Justice League annual #2. And the Joker shows up. Takes on the entire Justice League at a barbecue. It is a completely silly story. And I love that you can sort of reconcile these are the same guy. He can show up and be the most evil character ever. And at the same time, he'll invade your barbecue just because he wants to be included. There's so many different types of versions of the Joker. And they all seem to make sense because he's such an insane character.
I think you're right. I mean, there's a way to do Dr. Doom. And if you don't do him right, then you did him wrong. See the Fantastic Four movie. I don't feel like there's any way to do Joker wrong. I just feel like there's different ways to do him, which comes back to that Arkham Asylum Grant Morrison story, the idea that he reinvents himself every single day to be a different person. And you never know who he's going to be. And it made sense. That's one of the things about the Joker that is definitely cool.
Yeah, and I like in that Arkham that, you know, they played with things like, you know, is the Joker gay? Or is he effeminate? And none of these things, none of these categories apply to the character. And, yeah, I do like love that Justice League. He's got the tank at the end of it. And there is, and there doesn't have to be logic, and there doesn't have to be continuity to that character. You never have the thought, you know, aside from, you know, he beat Jason Todd to death and he shot Barbara Gordon. There is no continuity for that character. Every time he shows up, the rules are off. You know, any other villain, they turn up and you're like, okay, well, this is the kind of story I'm going to get, or I'm going to get the flip side of it where the writers decided to the 100% opposite version of the character. But with the Joker, there is no 100% opposite version of the character. Every time he turns up, there are no rules. You have no idea what you're going to get, and it's going to be just weird and wacky, and I'm hoping we see the character soon because he's only appeared in one issue of the New 52 and apparently got his face cut off. So,
really? There was no follow-up to that? Get the hell out of here. Seriously?
There's an offhand reference in one of the Suicide Squad issues to Harley Quinn being told that he's dead.
Get the hell out of here. They didn't follow that up.
That's it.
That was the cliffhanger to issue one. Yet. They didn't follow that up directly immediately?
Nope.
I hate you, DC. Are you
kidding
me? No,
aside from Harley being told that he's dead in about it, I think it was issue four.
You know what? Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, it happens. You know, I mean, for instance, remember the end of X Sanction, Captain America got killed.
He did, and we all missed Captain America.
Yeah, he'll be missed. What was it? You had predicted that it was going to be him firing off into the wall instead. Instead, what was the actual thing that they did?
Sleeper dart.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. I'm here to save my daughter by killing you with a sleeper dart.
Who had sleeper dart in the pool?
I thought it was a stun gun.
Some nonsense like that. It was nonsense, whatever it was. There was no X. I gave up two pages into that X Sanction number two. So as soon as I saw that they didn't carry that through any at all, I just quit.
All right. And lastly, last thoughts on villains as the four faces of evil. Let's talk about the evil we do. Brett, any last thoughts on villains and their place and you know, whatever's on your mind?
Well, I do agree with Keith completely in the ambiguity of villains. You know, when they are kind of grown as characters rather than just kind of left as Rainbow Raiders or Riders or whatever the hell, then those are the characters that I really do kind of want to read more of. Because, you know, when I mentioned Doom, I could have very well have been mentioning Thanos. I could have very well have been mentioning Darkseid. You know, there's any number of characters that are like that I really appreciate because they're characters. You know, they're not just Weather Wizard or something like that, which is just, you know, blah. And I also thought we were going to do a reformed villain.
Oh, you know what? We were going to do reformed villain, and let's get to that. But I do have a question. Who has the best rogues gallery, guys?
Oh, Batman, I think by far.
Is Batman?
Yeah, I'd say Batman. It's so varied, and he's got science fiction villains, he's got magical villains, he's got Killer Croc in the sewers. When you've got an artist that draws sewers really well, you get yourself a Killer Croc story happening right away.
Does anyone hate this character as much as I do?
I think it's a terrible character. He's one of the characters that when I see he's kind of a figure, I sigh a little bit. I slouch about 2 inches down.
You know, I used to think for years that the Superman's Rogues Gallery was really awful, but I think they've done a real good job improving it. I still think Batman's is probably number two. Flash's is number three. I go Spider-Man's. I think his rogues gallery is just awesome. It's my favorite.
More Rhino and Electro, please.
Yes, please. Personally.
Secret
Six or Sinister Six? Come on, nobody else can pull that off like the Sinister Six and different versions. And, oh man, I love it.
And the Frightful Five.
There's way too much Deadwood in Spider-Man's gallery.
There's Deadwoods in everybody's gallery. Firefly isn't Deadwood? Over in Batman's gallery? Please.
I personally kind of like Firefly, but no, there is some Deadwood there. But, I mean, not Shocker Deadwood. He shows up way too much. And
look, you can't use Electro every time. He won't be special anymore.
That's my problem with the Spider-Man, the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery, is there's just too much duplication, too much genericness. I mean, he's got some great villains. I just think there's too many of them.
I disagree, and I'll say that about Batman and Flash and Superman then. Spider-Man villains, unite!
They did. A lot.
They did quite a few times, actually.
Yeah, and it's awesome every time.
Next to Flash, they're probably the best at it.
All right, let's go on to reform villain, Brett. You have a thought of reform villain.
my favorite Reformed villain is Keith's favorite villain. You know, I'm going to go with Magneto, the often on Reformed villain. Again, it's that ambiguity in his character that makes him really good. But when he is a good guy, then he's my favorite. Although I will give an honorable mention to a guy that I think is surprising to me, Abner Jenkins, the Beetle, named Mach 4, who, you know, when I was reading Thunderbolts, I didn't actually expect to like it per se. But when Kurt Busiek was writing the Mach 4 character, I actually really did like it and thought that he managed to transform a 2-bit Spider-Man villain like the Beetle into a really decent leader for that team.
I always thought of him more as an Iron Man villain.
I mean, he's pretty much popped up all over the place, but since you mentioned Spider-Man, I figured I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, Spider-Man. Yeah. Keith?
Well, one of my favorite Reformed villains, who I believe is no longer Reformed because he seems to have done both over the years quite a few times, another Spider-Man villain, the Sandman.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
He spent most of the 90s as a good guy. And I may have taken one of my... It's okay, Brett took mine, so I had to throw in the Sandman. So, if you pick Chris's... I really enjoyed what they did with Sandman in the 80s and late 80s and then into the 90s, where he partnered with Silver Sable and became a mercenary. He had cleared his name, gotten a pardon for his various crimes. Just an enjoyable character. I think he's back to being a villain, and as a villain, he was really one note. I thought he was more interesting as someone who was trying to redeem himself.
He was, and his turnaround was really abrupt and shocking. Byrne, I believe, did it.
To Falco.
I remember. Sorry?
Falco.
It was Falco? I meant his turnaround back into
a... Oh, could be Byrne, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was Byrne's coming back to save the Spider-Man character at a series low point. And
then he made it low.
He just all of a sudden, oh no, I'm bad. And it's like, Sandman was an Avenger. That's not something you just turn on a dime on. I was really disappointed when they turned him back evil. I liked the good version as well. But that wasn't mine. I'll go with Manslaughter. I'm not a big fan of anti-villain or reformed villains, but Manslaughter was a character, a serial killer, joined the Defenders in the last run of the New Defenders. He was around for about 40 issues, and you were never quite sure if he reverted back to his evil self. He had a caretaker called the Interloper, who really prevented him from turning completely evil again. He was a psionic ninja. And he shared these, like, disgusting fantasies of, you know, killing people while sitting in the room with all these superheroes. He was the outsider of the Defenders.
Dexter?
Very, very Dexter. It was, but at the same time, you weren't quite sure if he was not, like, on the team for real, because he seemed to enjoy the company of these superheroes, and, you know, he'd just say completely inappropriate things.
All right, I'm going to do mine now. You know, the odds that somebody else was going to pick Sandman, some other son of a bitch on this podcast, were so long. I felt so safe. I'll give you another one, though, that I really liked. And you know what I'm noticing, actually? I'm going to go off on a side before I do mine here, guys, and get your comments on this, if anybody has any. Is anybody noticing, as we're talking about villains here, both, it doesn't matter if it's reform, favorite, worse, everything, it's heavily skewing towards Marvel. And what do you guys think of that?
Well, when I was even trying to think of villains for this piece, I was going through DC, like, I was seriously trying, because I know my bent towards Marvel, and I was seriously trying to think of DC villains, and I was just like, Black Adam? Joker?
Black Adam's like a good Joker. Black
Adam's I mean, you know, and Darkseid, I like Darkseid, but there's just not characters that I'm like, ooh, that guy right there. You know, not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I slant towards DC, and yet I'm heavily going towards Marvel, just talking about villains as a general rule. Anybody else, any thoughts? Anybody want to raise their hand, or should I just move on with mine now that I've stalled enough to come up with one?
Yeah, it's strange. I read, you know, hundreds and hundreds of DC books last year, and yet there's not a lot of characters that that leap out at me for villains. Partly, I think that, you know, and they roll through a lot of villains that don't get a lot of replay. You know, there were great villains in the Justice League, like Magna Khan, and you know, the other kind of comic villains, but they disappear as the titles go away. And there's not as many villains, it seems, that cross from one character to another, and maybe that's what part of it is that, you know, you just have the argument of whether Beetle is a Spider-Man villain or a Iron Man villain. He also fought Daredevil, so, but you don't see as many characters.
Yeah, I can't think of Sinestro ever facing anybody other than Green Lantern.
Yeah, and the same with a lot of the Flash films, that, you know, they're all in, part of it is, I mean, maybe that's because the DC isn't all in one city like the Marvel Universe is. Almost everything's in New York, whereas in DC, you know, the villains in Keystone City are going to fight the Flash.
Yeah.
I was thinking before the podcast, what's Keith going to pick as his favorite villain? And I started trying to run through Brewster Gold's rogues gallery. I couldn't come up with one name.
Didn't have much of a run. Rainbow Raider actually was the one he won that I put as a terrible villain. Booster's books were often about situations rather than specific villains, and Superman does a lot of that as well. That, you know, you can say maybe Mongol or Darkseid, Lex Luthor, of course.
Hey, we finally mentioned Lex Luthor in this.
I'm not a big Lex Luthor fan. I liked what they did with him.
Oh, we talk about this is a character that needs a reboot, right? I mean, this should be a great character. At times, has been a great character. Been a while since he's been a great character, and sure as hell ain't a great character right now.
Yeah, I don't know what's... I really haven't gotten a sense of who he is in the New 52, and I've stopped reading Superman, so maybe once... and Action, actually. So we'll see once he finally appears in a book that I'm reading what I think of him.
And he will. All right, I'm just going to throw mine out there as a reformed villain, the Prowler. There you go.
Very good.
There you go. There's a good one. I was like, that his miniseries in the 90s was good as a reformed one. I just want to say this about Sandman. The way that he reformed, you know, he and the Thing were in a Marvel 2-in-1, and you were like, you see the cover, and at the time he was a villain. I'm like, how are the guys teaming? And then you got to them, and you're expecting them to fight each other. And they just talked, and he talked about his regrets as a villain and all these different things. And the Thing, instead of fighting him, really understood him and kind of canceled him through. It was a spectacular issue. And then after that, directly after that, he tried to do things like get a regular job. But, of course, he couldn't have a social insurance number, so he had to make one up and get fired. And he was going through these struggles. So, yeah, as a reformed villain and how difficult it would actually be, that's what made that work. I agree with Chris. I was so pissed when they just, all of a sudden, he's bad again. I was like, what? You can't do that. You can't have me invest emotionally in the character and then decide, I want to do something different. You have to have a reason. All right. Any other final thoughts then, Brett?
I don't think he could have a social insurance number unless he's Canadian. But
Whatever. What would they call it in American?
Social Security.
Social Security. Same thing. Whatever. It should be a social insurance number because it's our sin. And we actually get to say that, Americans. This is our
Who's
sin number.
Who's your favorite Alpha Flight villain?
What's that?
Who's your favorite Alpha Flight villain? They'll have a
sin. On burn.
My favorite is Alpha Flight, the team.
All right.
Hey, Omega Flight was actually kind of an interesting team that fought them on a regular basis. Omega Flight worked.
All right, and on that note, Keith, any final thoughts on villains?
Now I'm thinking of his Alpha Flight villains. The Dream Queen.
Oh, the Purple Master?
Man. Purple Man, the Master.
Purple Man shows up all over the place. Like
Man was a character gone for years because he was so lame, and when they finally brought him back, they managed to do it well.
That's right. He's
Daredevil and stuff.
Daredevil villain, wasn't
yeah.
He? Was Daredevil villain to start, and yeah, they did a neat story with him and Alpha Flight.
Because he has the worst name ever for a villain, Purple Man.
It's a terrible name.
Final thoughts, Keith? Nobody cut him off, please. Final thoughts, Keith?
Well, I think that one of the things that DC is doing better now is building out these villains into more complex characters, like characters like Two-Face that have had a couple of ins and outs of which side of the law they're on. But Marvel, has done a lot of these characters like Magneto that reform and then don't reform, and what are their real motivations, as opposed to the rogues gallery who would just try to knock over banks and museums, and their motivations are quite simple. There's no gigantic plan with the Weather Wizard. He just wants to knock
over banks. They did do, Geoff Johns did do a good job of trying to give the rogues as a group and a more of an identity, and who was the more psychotic member, who was the more benevolent member, who was the more, the different viewpoints and the different ways, and he did try and do that, and I think he did do a pretty good job.
Certainly coming out of Identity Crisis, by having this subplot where villains had their memories altered in an attempt to either reform them or to protect the heroes' identities, it gave a new tone to the villains, to a lot of these kind of cheesy villains like Dr. Light and the rogues and the characters that have reformed, whether they had reformed on their own volition or not. It was a couple of interesting years as they played through that, at the repercussions of that story.
Chris, last thoughts on villains.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned Impossible Man, but other than that.
Impossible Man or Mr. Missiplick?
Mixie.
Is there a difference?
Everyone give it a shot. Mixie's Piddalick.
Mixie Piddalick. Supercalifragilistic.
Busick.
Mississia.
And now, do you like Impossible Man, or do you like Giffen's character in DC there? Which one's that one?
Mitsubishi?
Or is that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Ambush Book, are you?
Ambush Book, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Ambush Book. Impossible Man seriously blows.
I love
Andrew. All right, let's get into our review for the week's Wascally Wabbits. I just love saying that. Sorry. But the We Talk Comics review section called the Reviews, we're only going to do a couple books. We're trying to do Daredevil. We're thinking to do like 1-4 and then 5-8 next week. I personally only got like 2 issues and 1 or 2 pages in, so I'm not going to say too much. But, Brett, why don't you open up talking about the first story arc there on the latest Daredevil series?
As I've been reading more Marvel comics, I've been having problems with a lot of the newer stuff, because I just find that I don't really like what they've done with the characters. And I think that I can say that about Spider-Man, where, for me, as I read a few of them, I don't really like them. And so I guess I'm kind of... I was expecting that with Daredevil. I just finished off the Bendis run, and, I thought, it's okay. It is what it is. And so then I start reading this Wade run, and I'm like, hey, I actually think you've managed to find a nice way to keep what came before, but make the character I want to read. It's that he's still Daredevil. He's still Matt Murdock. He's kind of a fun-loving Matt Murdock. And he's not dark. He's not, trying to kill himself almost. It's not the Bendis run. But they still go back to the Bendis run, and they acknowledge that without having to be, Spider-Man where it's like Mephisto saying, everybody's going to forget that you were married.
And Brett just proved that he's so far behind on Marvel because he didn't mention the Brubaker run.
That's right. Yes, no, I won't mention the Brubaker run and the demon and stuff like that. But the truth is that I like the new Daredevil. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's my favorite book of all time, but I would definitely consider reading it.
Keith?
Well, I read number one when it came out and didn't really care for it. And I thought it was so bogged down in explaining away that his secret identity was secret again. And they just had to spend so much time nailing that down and like just shoving it at you that, okay, yeah, everyone knows that he's Daredevil, but technically it's only a tabloid story, so they don't really know it. They only suspect it, et cetera, et cetera. And then I left it, and I didn't come back to it. But when Chris gave it such high praise during the Wii Talkies a couple episodes back, and you know it hit so many lists of top 10 books of 2011, that I thought that was something we should take another look at. And you know Chris has kept nudging us every month that this is something that's actually worth reading. And I got back into it and read the first arc and really enjoyed it. Coming at it the second time, knowing that that part was there and that I could just kind of bypass it, it was back to, I mean, basically it's back to, you know, pre-Miller stuff. This character's been kicked around so much since Frank Miller. I mean, Frank Miller just made it the thing to do, that you had to out Miller. You just had to do even more terrible things to this character. Every time that you started a run, you had to kill off another one of his close friends. You had to, you know, humiliate him a bit more, take a bit more of his life away from him. And this new run, he's got a job, he's got a friend again, he's lighthearted, and he's like, you know, he's thinking positive. I don't know which self-help book that he got, but he's found a way to put this stuff behind him and is trying to move on in a positive way. And it's just a bit of a fun book again. You know, there is that stuff around the edge of the terrible things that have happened to him, but it's really forward thinking. It's really focused on adventuring and, you know, the running monologue in the captions I'm finding really interesting as he talks about how his power works and how he sees the world. And there's a lot of the comic that I'm liking that it's based on his unique viewpoint of how he sees the world. Not just how his powers work, but that the way his powers work influences the way he sees and experiences the world. So I'm into this book. I'm really liking it.
Chris, your turn on Daredevil.
Yeah, no. As everyone seems to be saying, I was sort of pushing this book, but it's not often a book takes me by surprise, and this one definitely did. I picked up the first two issues, I think, and read them and really enjoyed them. And it does. I didn't know I missed the pre-Miller Daredevil until I read this book. I forgot Daredevil used to be a fun character to read about. And I have to say, the villains in the first six issues of this book are fantastic. I mean, we got Spot, we got Claw, we got Ox, who I thought we'd never see again. We got rejects from the Circus of Crime. We got a Mexican wrestler Hydra agent. It's just fun. It's a good old-fashioned comic beverage. That said, I got to issue 7, and there's a little bit of a turnaround. And I was kind of scared we'd do the last two books review just the last two books in the run. It's a Christmas story, unfortunately, and some really stupid things happen. Some really stupid. I'm hoping this crossover with Spider-Man sort of turns it around. I'm not pulling the plug or anything like that. I'm just saying I see some warning signs starting with it.
Well, I've committed to reading the rest.
You could skip issue 7 without missing anything, though.
Well, no, it's a done in one story, yeah.
Yeah, I've committed to reading that first, whatever, so we can talk about it. But all I'll say is, because like I said, I didn't get that far in. I mean, I did think, like, the, hey, I'm not Daredevil. No, you're Daredevil. No, I'm not. I'm telling you I'm not, and that's the evidence. I did think that was kind of stupid. But you know what? I actually kind of enjoyed the book. I'm going to say this, because everybody talks about how this is Daredevil and it's fun, and all of a sudden you're not trying to ape Miller, which everybody did, especially poorly with Kevin Smith. But everybody go and read Joe Kelly's very fun, lighthearted, 90s, very good Daredevil run. Please. Other than that, yeah, I mean, I think I love the fact that he's kind of living in the moment, and I'm looking forward to reading more and seeing where it goes. I think this has a lot of potential. The art's nice and crisp, and evocative, a lot of great backgrounds and stuff in there. And
yeah, don't get attached.
Pardon me?
Don't get attached to that art.
No, it changes?
On a regular basis.
Oh, well, whatever. I enjoy the first art from the first couple issues. I'll trust they'll continue to find a good artist then, because the backup story in that first issue was also good. And I mean, it's nice to... Matt Murdock is a character I cheer for, and it's nice to feel like, you know what, he deserves a goddamn break. Give him a Kit Kat bar. All right, let's move on to our next storyline. And I know Keith is sitting there cursing us. I was cursing because he said Christmas Story. Keith was cursing because he's going, Joe Kelly, Daredevil's run, one more book on the list I got to pick up and read now. But seriously, it's really good stuff, and it's lighthearted like that. Especially his lighthearted crossover with Spider-Man there was a really good. So let's, and I like Joe Kelly as an artist or as a writer as a general rule. But let's move on to, I'm going to have Keith introduce it because he's the one who got it from to us. Another preview issue from our good friend Mike Luoma. Keith, why don't you explain everybody?
So this is a new Earthbound Comics book called Introducing the New Red Hot, written by Mike Luoma, who is a friend of the show. We've talked about his work in the past. And I'm going to take my best guess at this, Reese App Gwynn on the art. This is coming from Earthbound Comics, comes out soon. And Mike was nice enough to give us an advanced look at this. And I will say that this book was really cool. I really liked it. I liked the art. I especially liked the art, actually. As soon as I opened this book, it struck me like kind of like really clean Batchelot work. You know, not heavy inked. It's open, but it's a, you know, maybe a slight cartoony look, but I don't know. I liked it. There's not the emptiness that you see on a lot of indies. You know, these characters exist in a world. There's backgrounds. There's places that they're standing. There's buildings in the background. Basically, it's the story of the Red Hot, who is a second-generation superhero. His father or third generation. His father and grandfather were both called the Red Hot. Some heroes know the secret identity of his father and grandfather. And there is a super-powered group called The Team, who has a leader, we're just meet only a couple of members of this team, but one of the members may or may not be a villain. And that's where this book starts, is that the character Mind Man, who is the leader of the team, may have gone bad, and the Red Hot fights him, but this is the Red Hot's first time out, and now the media thinks that the Red Hot is a villain.
I thought that Leader One was the leader of the team.
They actually say on Mind Man, the leader of the team gone bad. Yes, the character called the leader is not actually the leader.
All right, Brett.
Unless they've got a different structure.
All right, Brett, your thoughts.
Well, fair enough. I really liked, I agree with Keith on the art. It definitely reminds me of like a later Batchelot. So I certainly do appreciate it. I like the story. I like the concept of whether Mind Man is a villain or whether he's doing it for reasons that will become known. I think my biggest problem with the book is the fact that I never get a sense of Red Hot's powers. Like, when I read this book, I'm like, I assume it has something to do with fire, but I don't understand. Like, what can he do? Is he strong? Is he good? Really super strong? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You know, it's just, there's no sense of the people in the book for me right now. And so I'm interested in the story, but I would like the people fleshed out a little more.
Chris, your thoughts?
I really, really like the art in this book. A little campy, a little cartoony, but it works for the type of story I think they're trying to tell. But I suffer from a severe I don't like any of these people, unfortunately. And I wasn't in the greatest of moods when I read this book first, and I came back a little bit later and try it again when I was feeling a little bit happier. And I really couldn't, even the Red Hot himself, I'm like, why should I care about this whiny little bitch? Or the team that they're all jerks. The character I liked most was Mind Man, and he was killing people. Well, not really, but you know, he was the villain of the piece. I just didn't latch on to anything. That said, if I read issue 2 and it makes a turnaround, gives me something interesting or a character that really sets my mind on fire, this could easily become a favorite book, but as of the first issue, it's not looking good.
I love the fact that the independent creators send us books to preview, and we really, really appreciate it. Mike, just want to throw that out there first off. And any other independent creators out there who want their book talked about and give us a chance to look at it and hopefully, you know, give people some interest in it. Because the independent creators, if you're listening to a podcast like this, you really love comic books. And these are the guys who really love comic books as much as you do. And Mike Luoma is certainly among that, and I really, really appreciate that about him. I think that his dialogue has come a long way from Alibi Jones, Adventures of Alibi Jones. I think his dialogue has improved a lot. I really think it's a nice natural flow to this. I think generally the pacing on this was really, really good. There was a little bit in the middle, a little bit of the narrative where I got a little bit confused. But I think that's improved a little bit from Alibi Jones too. We're seeing him get better as a writer. It continued to have... I really, as you guys, enjoyed the simple yet evocative art style. It continued to have really good lettering, Brett.
Absolutely.
It does have. I took special attention to the lettering. There's some neat stuff that he's done with that fire font.
Yeah, seriously. It's very, very good. I think his lettering is really, really good. It's really, really, it fits well. I think the artist, while I really like the art, I think he could be a little bit better for... And a little bit more inventive and better, a little better use of the page and the layouts to tell things. And I do think Brett had a really good point. And I didn't just think this about just the constructive criticism. Well, I enjoyed the book, and I think this is a good, fun superhero book, a simple superhero book with simple motivations and something where I want to see where it goes, and I want to care about these characters and grow to care about these characters. And I really did latch onto the character of Red Hot a lot myself. I really liked him, and I like his quest to prove that he is a hero and to find out if he's doing it because of lineage or because it's actually who he wants to be. I think that's a really interesting hook. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I enjoyed this book quite a bit. But I will say Brett was right, and it's not just Red Hot. I didn't know who anybody's powers were. I didn't always know who the setting was. There's a panel in there where it shows up and he kind of looks up and there's all these characters surrounding him he runs away from. And I didn't know if these were police or other superheroes. So I do think as some constructive criticism that Mike can do a little bit better job in perhaps his captions or whatever. But I think he can do a little bit better job of kind of telling us exactly who that character is, what the setting is, what their purpose or background or powers or abilities. I think he can do a little bit better job on that. I think that's something he can improve on and I think he will. And so I'm looking forward to continuing reading this. Brett, any final thoughts, or anybody else have anything to say about Red Hot?
Well, I would definitely consider reading this book, or keep reading this book, and I do look forward to it. I really look forward to an origin story, basically. I think that that this is an interesting character, and the little tidbits that we got from the first issue will definitely make for an interesting origin for not just Red Hot, but for the rest of the team as well.
I think he was able to do quite a bit in shorthand. As you talk, I can't jump in and explain what his powers are because, it's not totally clear. And I wasn't totally clear on why Mind Man is called Mind Man, et cetera. But there was some great shorthand of his motivation of being, the third generation with this name, wanting to make a name for himself, and he screws up his first time out. The team is the team, and that's really all you need to know. They're fantastic. They're not an analog of anything. They don't have to be. You just assume they're some kind of Avengers Justice League type team, and you move on from it. And there's a lot of shorthand stuff that he doesn't get bogged down in.
No, I agree, and I do appreciate that, and the pacing was good in that direction. But there's another character that introduces then the leader, and then you have a fight between the leader and Red Hot for a moment. And I'm going, well, I don't know. I sort of get what Red Hot powers were because he's in the entire issue, so I'm seeing them. But all of a sudden, this guy's going toe-to-toe with him, and why and how. And what they're just sort of fighting without any explanation of exactly how these powers are. I do think that that's something that can improve. You'll notice that you talk about how Daredevil's powers were introduced to you, his radar sense or something like that. Even the way the spot. He introduces the spot in the first issue because that's the one I finished. Well, the first two, but he introduced the spot and he goes, I learned about this guy. He's a contract man from Spider-Man. He has powers that are disturbing. He can jump into another dimension and reappear anywhere. That's not much, but it tells me all I need to know about the spot. And so I think, like I say, it's constructive criticism. I think that's something that Mike can find a way to work into the dialogue, the situation or captions or something. Just a little bit better, just to give us a little bit better of a basis for understanding where he's talking from. Let's do our final plugs here, Brett.
All right. Well, let's see now. I'll just start with the bookkeeping, the housekeeping, so to speak. Brett_WeTalk. That's two T's on Twitter. Brett@WeTalkPodcast.com. And we got lots of stuff coming up. Mo and I just finally are putting the finishing touches on our Janie Lane tribute podcast. And also it looks like we're going to have an interview with the band King coming up on a music podcast. Lots of great stuff to look forward to.
Well, I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. You can email me at Keith@WeTalkPodcast.com. And what I got coming up is saving my pennies because I'm trying to go to San Diego Comic-Con this year. It is on my bucket list. I've wanted to go since I was a little kid and first heard about it. And everyone I know has gotten to go, and I haven't. So I'm waiting patiently for the day that the passes go on sale, saving up my lunch money.
Chris?
All righty. I'm Chris at WeTalkCommentsPodcast.com.
I can't believe you do it wrong when you have a fucking cue card in front of you.
What? I said Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
That was awesome. Oh, God, that was awesome.
I am so going to set up a WeTalkComicsPodcast.com.
It's worth like $10 a year, just so that Chris's email goes somewhere.
Just so that Chris can be right any week, any given week.
This time, in case you're wondering, Chris, you said Chris@WeTalkComicsPodcasts.
And it was awesome.
So Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com if you want to email him. I'm Mo at Mo Talks. I can't say it now. Chris is Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com. If you want to email him, contact him or anything. I'm Mo at WeTalkPodcast.com or Mo underscore WeTalk on Twitter. As Brett said, we finished the Janie Lane. We're in the process of the extremely long editing stage at this point. This podcast, we had originally said it might come in at 3+ hours. It might come in at 6+ hours. There's an awful lot going on here. We've only got one segment done, but we have the entire thing recorded and we're just in that process. We've also had the return this last week, finally, since, first episode's posted since August 25th of We Talk Wrestling. It was a look back at 1989, the year in review, in two parts. And, we've had a lot of people who've come back to us and we really, really appreciate the support. That one's not for kids. Also, we're going to be doing 1997 in wrestling as well, by company, in 1997 for WWF at the time and 1997 for WCW. We're recording that soon, put those up, and we're probably going to watch the Royal Rumble this weekend and talk about that directly after. So if you're a wrestling fan, go into that. And other than that, as Brett said, that's coming out on what would have been Janie's 48th birthday would be February 1st. So that is the goal. That is our goal date for that one. And lots of great stuff coming from the We Talk podcast family. And anybody else with anything? Anybody else want to go out this one, OUT? No? All right. Well, then we're
come on,
OUT.
Chris, do it.
Okay, we're OUT. I'm just going to say finally.
Chris@WeTalk.
Oh, try it again, Chris.
Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Excellent. And everybody, seriously, support your independents, not just the ones we talk about. Support them all digitally through Drive-Through Comics or through your local independent comic book store. Absolutely support your local stores. So, OUT.